Live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Steve Grasso, Brian Kelly, Karen Feinerman, and Dan Nathan. A Powell pause. Wall Street in wait-and-see mode as investors turn their attention to Jerome Powell's big speech tomorrow morning in Jackson Hole. We're live on the ground with your setup. We're also following a pair of big after-hours movers, Salesforce and VMware. We'll tell you what's driving the action in both these stocks. And later, Boeing shares taking flight. We'll break down what sent that stock soaring today. But we begin with the great rate debate, the Fed's fight over the future playing out in real time in Jackson Hole. The big focus now turns to Fed Chair Jerome Powell's highly anticipated speech tomorrow morning. Let's kick things off with Steve Liesman live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for us. And Steve, we certainly got a big dose of Fed speak today, at least.
Yeah, we did. We had the first officials to speak at this annual gathering in Jackson Hole beneath the Tetons, but they didn't necessarily tell the markets what they wanted to hear about the need for deep interest rate cuts in the months ahead.
I didn't think the cut was appropriate necessarily, but I went along with it to get back to neutral. But I'm on hold right now. My forecast is just a hold.
My sense was we've added accommodation, and it wasn't required in my view. I think we're in a good place relative to the mandates that we're asked to achieve.
Now, Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan said he wants to avoid cutting rates if he can, but he says he's open-minded about rate cuts. He also seems concerned that the big decline we had in bond yields is sending the Fed a message that it should not ignore. The comments from the three Fed presidents highlight divisions in the overall rate-setting Federal Market Committee about where to set rates. 8 of 10 voting members, you'll remember, supported a rate cut, but two of them dissented. And minutes of the meeting that were released yesterday show that there's more support for these dissenters from the non-voters. All of this raises the stakes for Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, who will deliver a keynote speech tomorrow at the Jackson Hole Summit. Here's some of the issues that he has to deal with in deciding what to do with rates. First, he's got to navigate between U.S. growth at trend, but global economies are weak. Consumer strong, manufacturing slowing. FOMC members divided between the hold and between cutting interest rates. So, guys, we have that speech tomorrow morning. Not a set of easy choices in this bucolic setting we have. And I'm wondering whether or not he uses that term mid-cycle adjustment again. Melissa?
Yeah, because that really didn't roil the markets the last time around. But I'm wondering, I mean, knowing now what we know from the FOMC minutes that the committee was so divided over the last decision, or at least the reasons behind the last decision, it almost seems like every single interview you do out there, Steve, is even that much more important because you've really got to take the pulse of each individual committee member.
I think that's right. And I think we're learning now that at that press conference, what Powell could say about the need for additional rate cuts was prescribed by where his committee was. And I think we kind of knew that going in, but we certainly learned that more from those minutes, and we're learning it more from these interviews. We have a bunch more interviews coming up, Melissa, if you don't mind, I'll take a second to tell you what we have coming up. Tomorrow we have Loretta Mester from Cleveland, and we have James Bullard from St. Louis. We also have the speech by Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. We're bringing that to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow. The headlines from that as well. There's no cameras allowed in the meeting. And then later on in the day, we have Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England. So we get a whole sort of U.S. and international perspective about where interest rates are going.
Steve, it's Karen. Let me ask you, do you think we'll come away from tomorrow from Powell and Carney with clarity?
You know, that's a good question, and I think the answer is no. And the reason I think the answer is no is because I don't think that the course of policy in the U.S. is very obvious. I was thinking back on other times that the Fed has changed course, cut rates, or hiked rates, and you had unanimity at the board, near unanimity, because the case was pretty easy to make. You know, we are running at trend here. I mean, just step back and tell yourself something. The Federal Reserve cut interest rates at record low unemployment. That fact alone should be enough to say, you know what, these times are different, that it's a new set of rules, and what to do is not exactly clear. And I think you're hearing that. Now, some of you guys around the table may say, oh, the message is confused, the message is muddy, the Fed should be talking with one voice, or you could get this sort of different set of concepts and ideas and opinions out there. And it shows you really how difficult things are to figure out and how uncertain the prospects are for both the recession and for continued growth.
In the meantime, Steve, I hope you get some more time to look at the wildlife. You showed us some beautiful pictures on the halftime report of the bison and the wild horses, and that was much appreciated. It was a nice respite from the markets during the day. Thank you, Steve.
We can run that for you again, or I could go out and go fishing and send you some more pictures of that.
We don't need you in the picture, just the wildlife.
Oh, not me? Oh. Okay. I misunderstood.
Steve, good to see you. Thank you. Steve Leisman in Jackson Hole. All right, so what are we expecting here, and will the markets ultimately be disappointed?
The markets will find something to be disappointed in because we've been waiting for it for the entire week. I think the muddy will be the word of the day. I think he will be muddy. He's got a history of being muddy, and I'm looking for muddy tomorrow, and I'm looking for a sell-off after the event.
Although he is giving a speech.
Right.
He's with a script, in theory, with no cameras around and no Q&A. And that's where Powell really shines. When he's reading off paper a prepared remark.
And Fed governors have traditionally used this speech, or Fed chairmen have traditionally used this speech to usher in kind of new monetary policy. So, you know, Steve mentioned that the Fed cut rates when we have record low unemployment. The other side of their mandate, though, is price stability. And if you look at inflation expectations, they have been plummeting. So if you're sitting there and you're a central banker and you say, how do we not turn into Japan with basically zero rates for 20 years? You have to worry about that. So for me, when I look at the market tomorrow, I look at that speech, what I want to see is how focused are they on the inflation aspect of their mandate versus the unemployment? Because unemployment, check, great job. Inflation, not so much.
Yeah, so isn't it pretty interesting? Your point, BK, is that how do they avoid becoming Japan? And the answer is they don't avoid it. And if you think about what's going on, what we heard from the ECB, what we know is going on all over the world, is that these central bankers are tripping over each other to lower rates. And they're really doing it in a way that is going to make this a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. Inflation isn't really materially going higher. So you can talk about cutting rates at record low unemployment. If inflation's not going to budge, then we got a real problem here. And if Tina, you know, equities is the only game in town here because rates are going lower, ultimately that's going to be a huge problem because, listen, we talked about retail sales last week. We talked about consumer spending. You know, 70% of our GDP is consumer. It feels like the global economy is resting
shoulders.
On the U.S. consumer's shoulders. And when you look at that data and you go back 20 years, you know, the data falls off when the data changes and then it drops pretty hard. So I guess my only point is the stock market's going to sniff out a recession. You talk about inverted yield curve all you want. We have no idea when a recession's come, but the market's going to be down a lot, you know, a long time ahead of the recession or when we're able to call two consecutive down quarters
so
in a row.
It's not the 18 to 22 months that like a,
it
our
doesn't
friend
matter.
Tony Dwyer
I mean, it's backward looking at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's where the recession actually hits is 18 to 22 months later, but the market can show. But I wonder why, I know Karen wants to jump in here, but how come the U.S. flash PMI didn't come up on any of this? It's a 10-year time span before it got back to below 50. What does that mean to Esther George? Anything? I mean, this is when you start to see the hawks that were hawks in October, and now they're hawks again, it starts to feel like they're robotic and on automatic pilot.
I don't know. I guess you see a lot of mixed data, right? You can the president talking about this is the greatest economy ever, right? This is fantastic. And we need to cut rates 100 basis points, and we need maybe a payroll tax, maybe we don't. I don't know. I don't know how much the Fed feels they need to fight the tariff war. It shouldn't be in their mandate, but yet somehow it seems to be, and I don't know, that kind of
stuff. Well, to me, if you look at it, you say, why would the Fed need to cut rates, right? It's because other central banks have. And so the financial markets are forcing them in this. But if you look at the economy, to your point, you know, I don't hear a lot of people out there saying, boy, I'd really buy I would invest in a new plant and hire 100,000 employees if rates were 25 basis
points. Or 50
basis points. Or 100 basis points lower. Nobody's saying that. So if you're a Fed governor, you're saying, all right, our economy seems to be okay, but the rest of the world has kind of backed us into a corner. And that's where I think when we're talking about stock market, that's the confusion. And I think the stock market traded horribly today.
Yeah, I would just mention, like, let's go back to July 31st and August 1st. Those were two really important days. They may be, like, we may look back years from now and say those were the two most important days in a long time. The S&P had just made a new high, basically above 3,000. We had this 25 basis point rate cut, the first one in 10 years. The market sold off. It kind of got its footing a little bit because of that mid mid-cycle adjustment thing, and then the next day, the tariff tweet, okay? Those 2 days, really interesting, volatile, and we were down, what, I think peak to trough, almost 7%. We have not really recovered materially, right? We're still down 3% or something like that. So I guess the point here is that I don't think market participants really know what they want here, and I think when you talk about these PMIs this morning, the U.S. 10-year low and that, Germany disaster, some of the other data, you know, it's going to move around a little bit. I don't think the market knows that it wants bad data that's going to ensure lower rates, because who knows what that means? Are we going to be at $20 trillion and negative yielding sovereign debt soon? And what does that mean? And do the instruments that we have to combat weakening economic conditions, do they still work anymore?
All good questions. What does Jerome Powell need to say tomorrow to calm the market's nerves? Let's bring in Mark Cabana, head of U.S. rate strategy at Bank of America. Mark, great to see you. That question is interesting because it also raises the question, does the Fed or does Jerome Powell need to think about the markets and what will calm its nerves? Or does he say, you know what, I don't care, I got to do what I got to do?
I think he's going to be more in the camp that he's got to do what he has to do. I think that he doesn't want to try and placate financial markets, because financial markets are always going to want a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we're going to hear from Powell tomorrow actually raises the risks of disappointing the market to some extent. Because I think what he's going to say is that we're data dependent, we're waiting to see how incoming data evolves, and then we will act to sustain the recovery as necessary. But I don't think he's going to pre-commit to easing in September, and I think that's what the market really wants. I think the market really wants to hear that the Fed is being proactive. They're trying to get ahead of these issues. And I just don't think that given the data flow and the divided committee that they have right now, that he's going to be willing to do that.
So if he's not even going to commit or seem to commit to a 25 basis cut in September, then does that mean that are we going to look back at this Jackson Hole meeting just like we looked back when Mario Draghi said we're going to use all means necessary? We're going to look back on Ben Bernanke saying QE3 is on the table now and say this was the meeting Jerome Powell got the Fed out of the box.
Well, I think what he's going to try and do is preserve optionality, because frankly, the Fed is still divided and they don't exactly know how the data is going to break. We know that trade is creating a lot of uncertainty for the Fed, but it's yet to really materialize into clear downside signals. The employment backdrop is still very, very strong. You're right. Inflation is very weak, and that's a problem for them. But they don't really know if they can materially influence that with a 25 basis point cut. So I think what he's going to do is try and buy some optionality. Again, he's got a divided committee. They're uncertain. And they don't, I believe, want to underwrite the trade war. And as long as they don't want to underwrite the trade war, I see real risks that the Fed kind of slow walks the easing cycle that they, you know, just started at the last meeting. And I think that that risks disappointing the rates market.
I'm glad you brought up the rates market. So we're talking two different markets here, right? Stock
right.
market and then interest rates, the bond market. We know the stock market is looking for lower rates with kind of some slow growth. What's the bond market looking for, and are they colliding right now?
Well, I think that a lot of what the equity market has already baked in is what the bond market is expecting. And the bond market is expecting another 100 basis points of cuts by the end of next year, a fully baked 25 basis point rate cut in September, and then at least another one by the end of the year. And I think that what we heard from the Fed speakers today out in Jackson Hole, as Steve was commenting about a short while ago, is that they're not all fully on board yet. And if they're not on board, it's very hard for Powell to deliver a clearly dovish signal and to try and pre-commit the committee, because he can't, because the committee is not yet ready for that.
So you're talking about then potential sell-offs in both the equities and in the Treasury market.
That's right. And I see a risk, you know, just like the Treasury curve flattened some more today, right? It kind of flirted and was, you know, partially inverted, yeah. 2s-10s for a portion of the day. I see a risk that that curve flattening can continue, because the front end of the rates market is not going to get that pre-commitment, or at least that's what I worry that they won't get tomorrow. And then if that's true, then the back end of the curve says, uh-oh, growth and inflation might be in trouble. And if you get a little bit of an equity market sell-off, that only furthers the move lower in the equity market, or lower in the bond market.
Mark, great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank
Mark
you.
Cabana, Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Well, so when I watched the market today, we had that PMI that Grasso Stephen had talked about that was below 50. He likes to be called Stephen, not Grasso. I was told that. Anyway, that's beside the point. So we have below 50 print, which means contraction. So to me, that would say, okay, you know what? Bond market should rip higher. It didn't. And that, to me, is a huge canary in the coal mine, because I think the biggest risk to this market is we get rising rates and a falling market. So bond market sells off and the stock market sells off. Nobody would expect that. And that is probably what's going to happen.
Wait, so rising rates from the bonds being overbought already
Or they're not getting disappointed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or alternatively, this is the wild card, that the Fed comes out and says, you know what?
We're not cutting.
Or we're going to target 3% or 4% inflation. Then I think you see the long end really rise.
I mean, we talk about positioning a lot here on this desk in this particular market time. And so when you look at the bond market, you look at the equity market, I mean, it's extreme positioning in both.
And that's dangerous. I think, especially given the uncertainty, I think all of us that were around in the last two cycles when they topped out, interest rates were much higher. In 2000, they went down to 1%. Okay, that's the Fed funds, and then went down to zero in the throes of the financial crisis in 08. Both instances, the stock market got cut in half. What's different this time, and make no mistake about it, it is different this time. And we don't have any clarity like we didn't have then. And we were, again, I know I'm repeating myself, but we weren't able to call a recession until the markets were already down 20, 30, 40%, that sort of thing. So it's just a dangerous time. I mean, it just really is right now.
In recessions, to your point, in recessions, the Fed usually has in its history has 5 to 6% of ammo. Yeah. We don't have near that. So yes, you could use the balance sheet, but then you throw in the towel, and then you really become I don't know what. So that's my nervousness with this overall market. If we go to a recession, we don't have the ammo to get us out of it.
All right, coming up, we've got a check on a big mover. Stock triple play, in fact, Salesforce, VMware, HP, all on the move in the after-hour session. We'll tell you what is driving the action. And later, Apple reportedly set to unveil a new slate of improved products next month. But will the big bet on hardware really give Apple a boost? We'll debate that. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Salesforce. The stock is surging in the after hours. Let's get to Deirdre Bosa with the full story. Deirdre.
Hey, that call kicking off with Marc Benioff calling in from Geneva, Switzerland, commenting first on the business roundtable and calling that statement earlier this week an incredibly progressive stance. Now, we also got a preview of COO Keith Block's interview with Jim Cramer on Mad Money.
There's a huge wave of digital transformation. You know, a lot of these different technologies are coming together. And Jim, I have the opportunity, and Mark has the opportunity, to go around the world and talk to a lot of other CEOs. And, you know, there's just this huge imperative around digital transformation. And, you know, everybody needs to get closer to the customer. Everybody's trying to improve that customer experience. And that's where Salesforce really brings value to the table.
Now, going around the world, that's key because Salesforce is really focusing on its international expansion as concerns build that the U.S. cloud market is facing saturation. Now, another way Salesforce is trying to bring value to the table, a slew of acquisitions. Last year, MuleSoft for $6.5 billion and its nearly $16 billion purchase of Tableau just closing on August 1st. Yet CRM shares have underperformed the broader market and its peers this year. Now, as I hop back on the analyst call, they're going to want to know how these deals, Tableau especially, fit in and grow revenue. Be sure as well to catch more of Cramer's exclusive interview with Block on Mad Money. Melissa?
All right, Deirdre, thank you. Deirdre Bosa. Karen, you're just remarking about how remarkable the quarter is. Not only did they beat, but they also raised their forecast for the year.
Raised, and I mean, just this revenue growth on top of revenue growth, on top of revenue growth, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you know, to me, it's not the kind of stock I own because it appears to be expensive. Maybe it really
and
isn't.
And it has underperformed, though, too.
Yeah, but
so,
this is really impressive growth. And if people are looking for growth, and where are companies that aren't going to be caught in the crosshairs, this is interesting.
Yeah, one of the reasons I think for that underperformance, when you think about it, Deirdre just said they bought MuleSoft last year. They just announced this $15.5 billion acquisition of Tableau. I mean, this is a company not too different than Oracle 10, 15 years ago, that now, to keep that revenue growth and expected to grow above 20%, they need to keep making acquisitions. I guess the most important thing I would say is that their ability to raise revenue growth for the current quarter in front of the Tableau thing is pretty impressive, because you would say if you're looking at only up 8% versus a NASDAQ up 20%, versus a ServiceNow in a Workday up 25%, you'd say, what's going on here? Are investors starting to sniff out decelerating growth?
Right.
Well, that's clearly not the
case. Also, what's counterintuitive, at least to me, was you have the hybrid cloud. So you have on-premises, you have cloud, and now they're getting pushback that they need to be on-premises as well. And I think that's why you see the acquisitions coming.
All right, we've got a news alert as well on both VMware and HP. Josh Lipton's got all the details on both these stories in San Francisco. Josh.
So, Melissa, let's start with HP here and reporting results. But the big news here was CEO Dion Weisler is stepping down. Served as CEO since 2015. He's going to remain a director on the company's board, Melissa. The company's appointed Enrique Lores, who is currently president of HP's imaging, printing, and solutions business, to take over as president and CEO effective November 1st. I had the chance to speak briefly with Dion about this, as this decision was made to because of what he called a family health matter. He's going to be returning to Australia. Says, listen, a personal value of his has always been to put family above all else. He's living that value with this decision, but stressed to me he believes he's leaving this company in a strong position. Switching gears to VMware, now they had results as well, but their big news here was some deal news, acquiring Pivotal and Carbon Black, and deals valued at a total of $4.8 billion. So VMware's largest acquisitions to date, building on its strengths here, helping companies run their software in their own data centers, but also obviously moving the company more into security. In an interview with CNBC.com's Jordan Novet, CEO Pat Gelsinger, saying the companies will be operating profitably under VMware next year, and that by year two, he says, that will have contributed more than $1 billion in revenue incrementally, which will mean VMware, he says, will have more than $3 billion in hybrid cloud and software as a service revenue. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Josh, thank you. Josh Lipton in San Francisco. Carbon Black, this is interesting. Just went public last year for $19 a share, being bought this year for $26 a share. That was a surprise in the ramp of valuation.
Yeah, I think it's a surprise that they're making these acquisitions like this, right? And so if you're Carbon Black shareholder and all of a sudden you went from your venture to the IPO to this, you're a pretty happy person today. I'd be a seller of this.
Yeah, but what if you're a VMware?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You know, it's interesting when you think about this process. I mean, a lot of these companies go down a dual track with M&A and IPO as the possible exit here. And so maybe the valuations, maybe it's saying something more about valuation where we are right now, because, you know, being taken out in the public market well above your last private round and above your IPO price says that possibly things are getting a little frothy when you have stodgy companies, and they are stodgy. When you have a VMware, you know, this is a two-decade-old company, you know, buying newer companies at big valuations. What did Josh just say? They need this recurring revenue. They need to be able to say
they have this growth.
Yeah.
Well, look where it's trading in the aftermarket. It's down $10, which is almost the entire amount of both acquisitions together. So I don't know. The market's just writing them off now for zero. I don't know.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the technicals, getting back to that, because a lot of these names you don't traffic in a lot of times. So I cover a ton of funds and I'm not active in a lot of these funds. And the ones that I have been, I've been sellers for. But if you look at it on a technical basis, it's done a round trip for almost the entire year. So that 130 level was in total eye shot when you look at that January level. So on a technical level, you started at zero again. And I think that's the way the marketplace is looking at it, not giving it real value anymore.
All right. Well, for a wrap up of all the big after hours movers, including Gap, check out CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC. Here's what else is coming up on the show.
The Big Short Circuit. A famed money manager just went long on one of Wall Street's most shorted stocks. The full details ahead. But first, the countdown to Christmas. Sure, it's only August, but one big tech giant is already making a list and checking it twice. We'll explain when Fast Money returns. And everyone telling you be of good cheer.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Apple reportedly planning to launch new iPhone Pros, iPads, a new MacBook Pro, and new AirPods at a big product event next week. So could this possible product palooza give Apple a big boost? And we thought for a long time there was going to just be a dearth of product until the 5G rollout next year.
Yeah, so the answer is simple, and it's no. Because, I mean, listen, these are going to be all iterative products. I mean, they really are. I mean, they're just going to be really iterative products. And I think that, you know, when you think about this iPhone 10 that's been around for 2 years, so the talk in the Bloomberg report is going to be like some pro thing. It's going to be an upgraded camera. I just don't think that's the sort of thing that most consumers are going to upgrade for. And then one last point, you know, you were talking about it earlier. China really fell off a cliff in the Q4 and the holiday season last year for Apple. I think the way things are shaking out, especially with this consumer tariff overhang, this might be a really difficult quarter for Apple if the products are not exciting.
So it could be a repeat of last year's fourth holiday quarter was dismal.
Not just for them. I mean, it was dismal right. They weren't. It was not specific to them, but they were hit pretty hard. I'm long Apple. I'm actually a little bit nervous because it's starting to get to the upper sort of ends of the valuation as the services story takes more hold and we see a new PE ratio. But I'm going to hang on for.
Yeah, but there's different things that have taken place. You have streaming. You have the services that are now close to $40 billion worth of revenues. I'm ready for a new iPhone. I'm ready for new products. And the consumer is still in great shape. This is not last December. I think it's going to be a better season for them.
You're ready for a new iPhone, but
I'm ready for one.
Because they're upgrading the iPhones, or is it because you just need a new one?
I do want the better camera. We've switched to this. No one wears a watch anymore unless you wear an Apple watch. I do want the better. Sorry. But that's more jewelry, right? Is that more jewelry?
Yeah.
How many times do you actually look to check the time?
Oh, never. I mean, there's clocks everywhere.
So you wind up using this thing for everything. It's a camera now. It's already taken the place of a watch unless it's an Apple watch. But I do love the fact that you can get a better camera.
But that's like a subscription product, right? So they're going to have revenue off that. People are going to renew their phones. But what you're looking for is our services really going to take off, or is 5G going to prompt everybody to refresh their phone? Mm-hmm. I think that's the bigger catalyst, at least for my money, than it is necessarily an upgraded phone, an upgraded camera on an iPad, whatever they're calling it.
I mean, in the near term, though, the AirPods are like recurring revenue. Yes. I mean, how many times do you have one?
Right. Yeah. Right. How many times are you going to replace them?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot.
That's a nice stream of revenue.
Here's the big news about the valuation as far as you're concerned. So you're starting to get a little nervous in mid-teens sort of thing, especially when you think that services, which should be valued on a higher multiple, are not growing as fast as they were a year or two ago. Obviously, it's a huge business annualized at $50, $60 billion or something like that. 2019 fiscal year, they're expected earnings to be down, sales flat-ish, and they're expected to grow double digits again next year. So the point is, if the guidance that we get for the holiday quarter is not that exciting, then this stock will get re-rated a little bit. I'm not telling you it's going back to 130 where it was on January 2nd of this year.
Here's another unknown, and that is the impact of China. And last year we were talking about just a boycott because of the China-U.S. trade war, but this time around we've got the element of Hong Kong as well. Mm-hmm. And so if the U.S. appears to be siding with Hong Kong in any way, that could maybe inspire people to boycott Apple on the mainland, which would be a dent in sales.
Yeah, and we've seen it with some kind of other luxury goods, right? We've seen a couple of other luxury retailers. Now, I know it's not apples to apples, but an iPhone.
See what you did there.
I didn't even know I did that. I might just, that's it for me. I'm done. I'm done for the night. My point is, it's an expensive phone, so it actually is kind of a high-end retail luxury good.
Yep. Well, Apple is getting ahead of Christmas, and so we figured we should too, right? Yeah, sure. Here's the countdown clock. The countdown to Christmas is on. It's official. 125 days away. And that means you better make a list, check it twice right now. But don't panic. We're here to help. Todd Gordon of TradingAnalysis.com. There's three stocking stuffers you should bet on right now that could pay off big time by Christmas. Todd, take it away.
I can't believe we're talking about Christmas. So look, there's three stocks that I really like into the end of the year. I have about 20% of capital on hand I'm going to put to work once this market does stabilize. So number one is Lulu. So we're looking at daily charts here. We're going to be focusing on the 50-day moving average, kind of the interaction with the 50-day. So this is Lulu, and you can clearly see that we like to go down, kind of shake people out, run some stops. We've done it twice. Here we go on a third time. We've done just a nice double bottom here, just about 175 in Lulu, looking to recapture that 50-day. Again, with stabilization in the market, getting through these ranges, I will look to add more Lulu to my portfolio. Number two, Starbucks. I mean, no surprise here. Why overthink this? I mean, just an incredibly resilient stock. We're in a nice consolidation here. We haven't given back any price. We've retraced in time, not in price. So maybe we don't get a 50-day test. If we do, it's down around $90. That's fine. Okay to accumulate there. But if we do just move up and out of that range, again, I'd be a buyout, a breaker. How do I say this? I'd be buying a breakout through that consolidation. So that's Starbucks. And then finally, Twilio. This one was a high-flying cloud play. Has fallen into a little bit of consolidation here, sort of around the $125 region. But what I'll point your attention to here is relative to the S&P, we're starting to see a little bit of a turn-up. So Twilio, I think, is starting to come back. Again, getting through that 50-day, we could continue higher up around 150 in Twilio.
And just quickly, Todd, we were talking about Apple. Karen was saying that she was getting concerned about where it is right now. Are you? Should she be concerned?
From a technical point of view, yes. And the models and the way that I look at Apple is very concerning. I love that it's, you know, pushing up around the 215 area. But from the model that I follow, which is specifically Elliott Wave, it doesn't really fit into a stock that's ready to go up and you know, do $230, $250. So I own Apple as well, and I'm writing a lot of calls against it. I'm concerned about Apple, so I agree.
All right, Todd, thank you. Todd Gordon. Merry Christmas, Todd.
Same
to you. Might as well start now, right?
And DeGrasso. Don't forget about the Garmin. It's not too bad.
DeGrasso's got a Garmin, I think.
Yes, it broke on vacation.
Which socks do you like, the Todd?
Lulu.
Lulu.
Okay. Lulu, I think it's got the biggest potential for surprise. I think people are underestimating the menswear line. I see a lot of men wearing those new pants over here. Seriously, everybody that I talk to is buying these pants. I think there's a big chance for out surprising.
I guess of the three, to me, Starbucks. I mean, that last quarter was really phenomenal. The acceleration of the business, the way digital is just, I can't believe how much revenue it's adding. And it's got that, what I think, gravitational pull, or the vortex, however you want to call it, to 100.
The stance.
Well, no, it went to a hunch, okay? But it also started the summer at $75, you know? So you're talking about all that revenue they're adding. Okay, the revenue growth is 7% this year. It's decelerating from 10% last year. I mean, so, like, I think there's some really crazy things going on. Target was up 20% in a day yesterday. Did they earn 20% more than investors expected them to? There's some weird stuff going on here, guys. I mean, like, trees don't grow to the sky. Where's Starbucks going if it breaks out of this range? Is it going to 120?
Some could argue that Target should have never been 20% lower where it started today.
But Mel, isn't it fair to say that we're all making trades and investing in things based on the information that we know? And when the information that comes out is just mildly surprising, but it's not 20% better,
right. Yeah.
A stock shouldn't go up 20%. I mean, it's just that simple. And Starbucks is up 100% in a year.
Right. So I'll start off with Lulu. I do believe that they're expanding their base of clientele and consumers. So I'd be a buyer there. Twilio, I don't like that stock, even though it's relative to the S&P. Looks like it's ticking higher. Looks like it's rolling over. I spoke to CFO of Dunkin' Brands. Maybe if Dan doesn't like S-Bucks, we can go with
Dunkin'.
Mm. Dunkin' on that. It's only up 30%. And the coffee's much better, by the way.
Is it?
Oh, less bitter.
I brew at home. Coming up, here's a Boeing rallying on new hopes towards grounded 737 MAX jet. Could this be a sign that clear skies are ahead for the company? Plus, Bitcoin crawling back above 10,000. But BK here says there is one chart that got him a little bearish on the cryptocurrency. We'll show you that chart much more fast straight ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Boeing flying higher today after the company told suppliers that they will ramp up production of its best-selling 737 jets starting next year. Our very own Phil LeBeau is in Chicago with the details. And, of course, this all depends on whether or not it's cleared for flying.
Correct, Melissa. And it also depends on the time frame. We've known that they're going to ramp up production next year, provided the MAX is recertified. What's changed is this. They currently are building them at 42 per month. We knew that they wanted to go up to 57 next year, but now we know from talking with people in the industry, suppliers, people who are familiar with the plan at Boeing, that the idea is to get to 52 per month by February and then potentially to 57 per month by June. However, it all depends on whether this timeline for getting the MAX back in service holds. What timeline am I talking about? It's this one. Recertification, a flight happening, an application being filed with the FAA and other regulators in the September timeframe, likely by the end of September. Shortly after that, Boeing expects the FAA and other regulators to approve the MAX fix and then say, yep, you're ready to go, and then the MAX returning to service in the fourth quarter. If that doesn't happen, don't expect them to be building 52 per month by February or 57 per month by June. It'll all get pushed back. And that's why when you take a look at shares of Boeing, this is a bit of a relief rally. Everybody knew that at some point they were going to be pushing up production again. And now that they have a little bit of a time frame that's attached to it, people are breathing perhaps a sigh of relief. Also, take a look at Spirit AeroSystems. Now, Spirit has always been building the fuselages out of its plant in Wichita at 52 per month. They didn't bring it down to 42. Now that they're planning to go up to 57 per month sometime early next year, That's why shares of Spirit AeroSystems, you really can't see it here in this full chart here. But believe me, it moved higher along with Boeing today. And we're going to see this, guys, play out as we finally get a little bit of certainty, if we get a little bit of certainty regarding the MAX getting back into service.
Would you say, at least, Phil, this time frame, this timeline gives investors a lot more clarity than they had before? Because at least from here, we could say, well, if it doesn't happen in the fourth quarter, it happens in the first quarter, then we can say maybe record production will return by the third quarter of next year as opposed to the second quarter.
Sure. Yes. But for the most part, most people in the industry have expected this, Melissa. I think what you're seeing here today, this public acknowledgement, and look, Boeing's not commenting on this. This wasn't released by Boeing, but they also didn't push us away from this story. And I've talked with other suppliers in the industry who said, yeah, that's basically what we've been told as well. People have known this is coming. What you're seeing here today is somebody saying, aha, now I can attach February and June here. If that gets pushed back to May and September, they can live with that as well. But we've known that eventually you're going to see the MAX production get back up to 57 per month. That's been the plan all along.
All right. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau in Chicago for us. So based on these headlines, this story, was that 4%+ increase in the shares of Boeing worth it in your view today?
Yeah, probably. I actually thought it had bottomed out at about 340 maybe a month or 2 months ago, when I felt like the bad news stopped having the same effect it would have had earlier in the story. So that was a little premature. So I think, I mean, it's still expensive, but relative to Boeing's own history and price, it's not expensive for where we are.
I'm a firm believer, if you can't tell a story in 15 seconds, then you probably don't understand the story yourself. And not that Phil didn't understand it, but there was a lot of timelines. There was a lot of timelines on that.
See, 20 seconds.
Keep watching. Well, that goes without saying. I definitely don't understand
this.
So, you know, for me, a stock that has been hit with everything and is still up 9% for the year, that tells you a lot about it. It's a great stock, but I still think there's a lot of headwinds.
Well, here's the thing. If people tell you that they think all the bad news has been sent its way, I would say you're crazy.
No, it stops reacting to bad news.
Well, let's just see when courts and government agencies find them negligent in the deaths of 350 people and two deaths and the liabilities associated. I mean, listen, you know, Chipotle sold some bad lettuce in their burritos a few years ago. The stock got cut in half. You know, I'm just saying. And no one died. But there's no outrage here about what's happened here and their efforts as far as the registration of with the FDA. I think it's crazy. I think this should be a much, much bigger story. I just wouldn't be buying the stock here. It's one of the worst stories that I can remember in 20 years in the business of a publicly traded stock. And they have not been, their feet have not been held to the fire.
I think Dan makes some excellent points there. I just feel as a trader, I don't have an edge on this stock, right? I don't know what's going to happen here. So we've already made the move on the fact that they might be ramping up. Why buy it now?
See, under 15 seconds. Sorry.
That was good.
He really gets it.
Coming up, crypto concerns. The one chart that has Bitcoin baller BK a little bothered here. Plus, Foot Locker reporting earnings tomorrow, but options traders are betting the stock will get trampled on the results. We'll break down the action much more fast right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We are nearing the finish line in a monster week of retail earnings. Foot Locker reporting results before the bell tomorrow. The options market's predicting a big move may be in store for the retailer. Dan's over at the Plaza with the action. Dan.
Yeah, so this one's massive, Mel. 15% implied move in either direction just tomorrow, more than about $5.50. This stock has had a big bounce since making a multi-year low just last week. It's up about 14%. The activity today was pretty interesting. I think it's really important. A lot of people make assumptions about what they see in the options market. What was clear to me, the most active strike was the September 45 calls. This on a day that the average, the total volume was five times average daily volume. The September 45 calls, but a lot of them look closing. So after you had this big rally in the stock, it could have been somebody who was positioned for that rally looking to take some profits after a 13% move in just a week or so. But let's go to the charts. This one's going to be really interesting. Obviously, it's up in sympathy with some of these retailers that had dead count bounces off the lows. The start of January 2018. And it's really interesting when you look at this $45 level here. Big resistance over the balance of this year since this kind of massive gap here. But it's really interesting to highlight this level here, because that was prior support. When you see these breaks in trend like we see right here, it takes an awful lot in time to reverse that. So we had that gap earlier in the year. The stocks consolidated around here. Another miss and a guy down, and you probably have a gap lower. That being said, the sentiment is so bad in this name, any small positives on the fundamental side, and this stock should get back up to 45 and possibly looking to fill in that gap a little bit.
Karen, this has been a name.
It's a name I've been in and out of
For a long time.
Tears, joy, both. you know, I'm hoping that, like Dan had said, any kind of it wasn't so terrible kind of earnings like we've seen from Nordstrom's, which wasn't that great. The stock really reacted well. BJ today was good. It was very good, but the reaction was very big to the upside. So I'm hoping the bar is really low. What I like about his valuation here, I think we have a chart. I've been looking, to me, cash flow, that is the ultimate arbiter of value. And if you look at the price to cash flow here, it's just about as low as it has been maybe ever. And why it was up today is Dick's Sporting Goods, right? So Dick's Sporting Goods, really, they called out footwear and apparel. And Nike, their biggest distributor is Foot Locker.
Right.
So I'm long. I am nervous, but I am long.
You actually presented a trade, an options action
indeed.
At Foot Locker. And by the way, Karen's going to be on options action on Friday. Maybe we'll get an update on that very trade.
We'll get it. Could be tears, could be excitement. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we're all at the edges of our seats. For the full show, options action we mentioned, tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Up next, Bitcoin falling back above 10K, but BK here says it's not out of the woods just yet. He will explain. We're live at the NASDAQ in Times Square. Much more fast still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a Bitcoin alert, the cryptocurrency crawling back after crashing below 10,000 yesterday. But our very own Bitcoin baller says he's feeling a little bearish. He's got one chart to explain why. And before we get to the chart, I mean, the context of this is that it was heading towards its worst week since November or some crazy stat like that.
Yeah, we've been in this correction since 13,000, right? We had this huge run up to 13,000, and now we've pulled back. And part of the reason why is the fundamentals haven't really supported the reason why we went up. So the one thing that I look at for Bitcoin is active daily addresses. So this is active daily addresses, 30-day moving average. And what you can see has happened, that orange line is a trend line. You can see since the end of June, end of July, you've seen a drop-off in active daily addresses. You might want to think of this as like MAUs or DAUs for a social network. That's what's happening here. So I think the price has got a little bit ahead of itself. That being said, there's going to be a chance here. And we saw it back in December and January of this year for you to buy Bitcoin. And it's going to be a generational buy at that point. It's just not here, I don't think. So in the short term, I'm a little bit cautious.
What are the signs that you will look for that it's a generational buy?
So number one will be to see the price going down and those addresses going up. That's what we saw in December and January. We saw the price continue to crash down and the activity on the network was really increasing. So that's probably the biggest thing I'll look for. Second thing is kind of the sentiment in terms of, all right, does everybody think Bitcoin's dead again? Mm-hmm. When people start saying that, then I'll get real.
Are there any other reasons why those addresses can go down?
Yeah.
Any other reasons why that it could be different this time? Or
so the reason why it could be different this time is there are a lot of institutions trading derivatives, right? So they're not necessarily getting a spot address like a bank account. So that could be what's going on here. And it's the first time we've seen it. So it could be different.
All right. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade, Steve Grasso.
I would be a seller of Salesforce on the pop, and I'd be a buyer of Microsoft. I think the market gave you a gift. I'm still long at Microsoft.
BK Brian Kelly.
So I think you could have a real disappointment with rates tomorrow. TBT is your way to play disappointment and Powell.
Chairwoman.
Yes, as I said, I'm hoping that the bar is exceedingly low for Foot Locker. Not only do they stumble over it, but they actually jump high over it. Could go either way, though. I'm optimistic. Long Foot Locker.
All right. Dan Athan.
Yeah, so, you know, retail was really the story to me in the stock market this week. Obviously, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, there are a lot of good stories. But I think the balance of them, including maybe Foot Locker, really stink. I think you sell the XRT because not have the balance expected.
Is it still the worst chart in the world?
It is quite possibly.
All right, just check. That does it for us. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. In the meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.